starting with some agenda paper 10. I'll hand him over to the AO office. Hand over to the AO office. Okay, so we're ready to start agenda paper 10.
Okay, Sari, you can start introducing agenda paper 10.
Okay. At the last November meeting, the board decided to update a reference to the conceptual framework in IFRS 3 and to add an exception to the recognition requirements in IFRS 3 for levies within the scope of IFRIC 21 and other obligations within the scope of IAS 37. Today, agenda paper 10 covers several matters the board needs to address before developing an exposure draft. The first matter is how to word the proposed exception so that it works in harmony with existing IFRS 3 requirements for contingent liabilities. The staff recommendation is in paragraph 12. The staff recommends specifying that levies within the scope of IFRIC 21 and other obligations within the scope of IAS 37 should be recognized on the acquisition of a business only if they would be identified as present obligations applying IFRIC 21 or IAS 37. So, do you agree?
Thank you. Help me understand the problem you are raising. In IFRS 3, there are two paragraphs talking about the exception of contingent liabilities. And actually, paragraph 22 and 23. And paragraph 22 confirms the current IS 37. And in this paragraph 22, it says it do not include contingent liability as a liability because it has a lower threshold. But in paragraph 23, it says in the IFRS 3, you have to recognize it at the acquisition date. So I think that is the problem you are talking about in in your paragraph 10. IFRS 3 does include contingent liability. Is that correct?
Yes, and yes.
Okay, so then my struggle was in the current conceptual framework, the present obligation and the liability is quite similar compared to the conceptual framework we had before. So in our conceptual framework in itself, there isn't such kind of discrepancy, is my understanding correct?
Yes.
Okay. So actually, we are trying to make the exception to our conceptual framework and to try to make it in the IFRS 3. But the IFRS 3 includes IS 37, which has a slightly different idea. So I was wondering, how would you manage to do that?
Right. Okay, well, I think what we're proposing to do does make it all work together. And the problem really arises, and the need to talk about present obligations rather than liabilities arises because in IS 37, some liabilities aren't called liabilities, they're called contingent liabilities. And they actually meet the definition of a liability, but they're called contingent liabilities. And to make sure that we are talking about both that type of present obligation and those that would be called a liability, we use the term present obligation instead of liability. Mm. And what the new exception would basically be saying would be that it is to recognise a liability or contingent liability applying IFRS 3, it is necessary that it meets the definition of a present obligation applying IAS 37.
Oh.
And then you then step on from there and say, well, which of the present obligations do we recognise? And you go into the existing text of IFRS 3, which says it's sufficient for it to be a present obligation if it can be reliably measured. It doesn't need to have probable outflows. So it divides it into the two steps, with the new first step applying to both liabilities and contingent liabilities.
Mm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah. But when it comes to drafting,
yeah.
So avoiding the confusion is really important. Otherwise, people would confuse. If we leave paragraph 22 and 23 as it is, then it is written something different from what the conceptual framework is talking about.
Yes.
And then you are going to put some new paragraphs.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether we can keep the consistency within those paragraphs. Mm-hmm. So that was my curiosity. So,
I think we have to leave the existing wording on contingent liabilities for now, because it's taken from IAS 37. And essentially what we're trying to say to people is that for liabilities and for provisions and contingent liabilities, you look to IAS 37, except that you don't apply the probable outflows criterion.
Thank you.
Okay, so with that, can we vote on question one? So that's all in agreement. I have to be nearly.
I say, can be nearly.
All present agreement.
All present. Well, that was an easy one, but it might get more complicated.
Well,
just hands.
13 in favour and one absent.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. The next section discusses contingent assets. The staff recommendation is in paragraph 18. The staff recommend clarifying that in applying the IFRS 3 recognition principle, an acquirer does not recognize contingent assets. Do you agree?
Agreed.
Jim Cha, is your card up or down?
Here. Okay.
Ooh,
okay. Yes, I have a question. Based on the analysis of paragraph 15C, and the staff said that based on our new conceptual framework, it seemed that the contingent assets meet the definition of the assets, and simply because there is uncertainty about the existing of the assets. But then the staff said that an entity might not recognize the possible assets in its financial statement. In my understanding, based on this analysis, it seems that still there is still some situation that contingent as possible assets could be recognized in the financial assets. And so if this is the case, but the question asks that actually all those cases, all those contingent assets will not be recognized. So it seems that some inconsistency between the analysis of paragraph 15C and the question they ask.
Okay, right. Well, I think what 15C is trying to say is that the conceptual framework allows for the possibility that assets with existence uncertainty, so possible assets, could be recognized. So standards, the board could write standards that say entities shall recognize assets, possible assets with existence uncertainty. But that we think that IFRS 3 hasn't been written that way. It's been written to say that entities shall recognize present obligations. And then in the basis for conclusions, it said, and that, by the way, that means it wouldn't recognize possible assets. Mm. And so the board has written IFRS 3 so that possible assets aren't recognised on acquisition, and we're saying that nothing in the conceptual framework actually overrides that, because the conceptual framework basically says if you've got a possible asset, the board will need to decide or whether when they're developing standards, whether these possible assets should be recognised or not.
And IFRS 3 hasn't done
that. And IFRS 3 has said you don't. So, and we're just saying nothing in the framework overrides what IFRS 3 already says, because it leaves it open. But we want to try and clarify that, because
the conceptual framework... Yeah, I think it's better to clarify, because this amendment, this question asked, resulting how to make consistent those specific standards to the new conceptual framework. So, yeah, I think it's better to clarify further. Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
John Wu?
Thank you. Just a small clarification, maybe similar to the Jin Zhao's. Maybe paragraph 15C, the last sentence. We are saying an entity might not recognize.
Yeah.
Should not or might not.
Well, I think what we're saying is that the conceptual framework is leaving it open. In the recognition section, chapter 5, it talks about the situations in which recognizing an asset might not provide useful information. And one of the situations it discusses is when there's uncertainty about the existence of that asset. So it's the conceptual framework isn't saying you do or you do not recognise assets with existence uncertainty. It's leaving it open for the board to make decisions in individual standards. Mm-hmm. And we think that it did make a decision in IFRS 3, and we just want to make that clear.
Ms. Chung Wu, is your observation really that typically we've decided not to in that case, so might not sounds much more likely than in practice what's happened?
That would maybe there are many implications from this sentence.
Right.
The couple of the previous sentence to this sentence, you said it's clear. The new conceptual framework says contingent asset.
Yep.
Its existence is uncertain.
Yep.
That's why it's not an asset.
I think it's the level of emphasis on that.
Yes. However, the last sentence saying.
Okay.
That's why I'm saying a little...
When actually, in most standards, it says if there's uncertainty,
right. You
do not recognise. That's the, yeah. So it's the might makes it sound too
common.
Uncommon.
Yeah. I put my card up just to say that when I read this, I put a big tick next to it, because I think we're asking quite a lot of people reading our standards to connect all of the dots that the staff have led us through in these papers, because it's not terribly, to me at least, terribly intuitive. You have to think about a lot of different steps to get to this conclusion. So I think it's a good opportunity to shed a bit of light on that to help people, so that let's just make it easier for them when they pick the standard up. So if I can strongly agree with the staff recommendation, I strongly agree.
If there's an extra vote.
Yeah. No. Actually, it doesn't. But, Amara?
Can I just comment on this? Maybe in addition to your because I'm not clear if you are suggesting that the staff brings up,
up
a little bit when concluding, or leave it as it is and just asserting that we'll have to think many, many, many components to get to this. So is that a suggestion for us to beef up a little bit, maybe in the basis for conclusion, explain a little bit more?
I think that's what you're proposing, yes?
Well, what we're proposing is actually saying in the standard itself, you do not recognise contingent assets, but we could add more on how it all fits together in the basis for conclusions, to explain why it got to its decisions as being necessary.
I think that would be extremely helpful.
Okay.
Okay. So with that, can we vote on question 2, please? So that's everyone.
13?
13. One absent.
The next matter is on transition and early application. The staff recommendations are in paragraph 32 And the question that follows asks the board whether you agree with the staff recommendations in paragraph 32.
Mary?
I have two rather geeky points on this. One is about first-time adopters. The reference in paragraph 27 says that you're not required to apply IFRS 3 retrospectively. I'm not sure that that's absolutely correct. And I think this is a drafting point. I don't have any fundamental disagreements with the approach, but for first-time adopters, they have to apply the business combination standard at least 20 business combinations after the beginning of the earliest comparative period presented, and they can elect to apply it to earlier business combinations so long as they apply it to all business combinations from that date forward. And so depending upon what the effective date is and the date somebody's a first-time adopter, you could have a situation in which somebody is required, somebody could read it as, I apply the old version to my earlier ones and the new version to my newer ones. Now, I don't know if there's I didn't go back and look through all of IFRS 1 to see if there's a general apply only one version of the standard instruction and how it interacts with C1 of IFRS 1, but I think paragraph 27 is maybe missing a step in the analysis. So perhaps just ask the staff to think about that. And the other thing is, with respect to early adoption, again, agree fundamentally with the staff recommendation, but it kind of leaves open a question, and this again will depend on the timing of finalization of this, about whether you could early adopt the other cross-references amendment without early adopting this one, and I think we should just close that off.
Okay.
And so can I see a show of hands on question three?
Okay, the last questions are on due process matters. Question four follows paragraph 44. First, question 4A, do you agree that board should allow 120 days for comment on the proposed amendment?
Show of hands.
13.
Thank you. Question 4B, are you satisfied that the board has complied with applicable due process steps for developing an exposure draft and that the staff should prepare an exposure draft for plotting?
13.
Finally, question 4C. Do you intend to dissent from the proposals in the exposure draft?
No.
No dissent.
So, yes, we're